You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
And welcome in MLB.com Extras, the American League West edition. Another interesting week in the AL West, whether it's the Astros winning streak that reached double digits or a magic boomstick in Seattle. The A's, Angels, Rangers still trying to find their way. A lot to talk about this week in the American League West edition. B-Tags, the Houston Astros 10-game winning streak. It came to an end ultimately, but looking back on it now, what stands out to you? What key moment, if you will? Is there anything that sticks out from 10 straight wins?
Well, I think what sticks out is just how their offense really came around. They really found their long ball stroke. They were hitting three or four home runs a game. It seemed like they even hit five in one game, and it just wasn't the same guys. It was one night it was Rasmus and Gattis and Altuve. The next night it was Valbuena and Marisnik and somebody else. So they got contributions up and down that lineup from everybody. And we saw the first couple of weeks when they were 8-7, and people were like, you know what? They're improved. They're playing better. Their defense was good. Their pitching was really good. They're 8-7. You know, that's not bad. And then the offense finally took off. And I think we talked last week. You were asking me about, you know, why the Astros were playing so well. And I said pitching and defense, and you brought up the fact that the last couple of games they'd hit the ball really well. And then it just really took off even more after that. And then, you know, last night or Monday night, they laid kind of a dud where they only had one run. But still, you know, they've won 14 out of 16 entering Tuesday and 2 1-run losses. So nothing to hang their head about. No reason why they can't come back and rebound and win a series against the Rangers. And then they go on the road again. But, you know, they opened up a 7-game lead on May 3rd in the division, and nobody saw that coming.
No, I think safe to say that one snuck up on everybody. But you've been around this team long enough to remember the great runs in the early 2000s and, you know, the ultimate World Series appearance. Then the, you know, that disappointing, drift that took them to the last couple of years where they'd averaged, in the last 3 years, 104 losses per season. And now we're seeing this incredible start. What does it do, though, to the expectations, whether it be in and around town or in that clubhouse? What does this mean, or was this just a really fun short-term run?
Well, we'll see if it's a fun short-term run, but I think now you get off to the start, and it's to the point now where, okay, don't blow it, because you have a 7-game lead, and you're on pace now. Even if you play .500 the rest of the way, you're going to win 86, 87 games, be in contention. And now things get really interesting. The games really mean something. And, you know, for years around here, the last 4 or 5 years, by the time you hit Memorial Day, pretty much, you know, there wasn't much drama anymore. It's just a matter of how many games they were going to lose. But now the games are going to mean something. There's going to be pressure on some of these guys. And guys like Altuve and Castro and Keuchel, who've never been in these situations, Colin McHugh as well, they're going to be pitching and playing in some of the biggest games of their life. So I think the expectations are high, even though we're sitting here in early May, mid-May. The Astros everyone's looking up at them and wants to beat them, and they have a lot on the line. So, and I think they'd be really disappointed at the end of the day if they, you know, they end up at the end of the season, if they end up winning, you know, 80 games and go 80-82, look back and say, you know what, well, we were 10 games over at .500 and we sort of slid there. So now they've had a taste of this, and they know what first place is about. They've been in first place a couple of weeks. By all means, I think they want to stay there, and that's going to be a big-time challenge because we've got a long way to go.
Yeah, very long way to go. We've talked, you know, week by week about whether it be this portion of the game or this particular individual who's done well. But one thing we really haven't touched on has been the change in the dugout and A.J. Hinch's role in this. And so I'm curious, after Bo Porter's run, what difference do you see? How much of a difference is there around the clubhouse and this team with A.J. Hinch's influence?
Well, it's a big difference. A.J. has come in, and he's been content to be kind of the man behind the scenes. He's not a me guy. He's content to let the players play. He doesn't want to put a whole lot of pressure on them. That being said, I think he has a firm thumb on these guys, and they know what they can and can't do. But, you know, when spring training started, he had his door open and everybody came through and he pulled everyone aside and told them, hey, you know, you're coming to camp, you're battling for this job and we need you to do this. And if they ever had a question where they stood a week or two later, his door was always open. You know, if somebody was struggling midway through camp, they could go in and say, what's going on? What do I need to do? And he would be honest with them and he would tell them. And I think that open communication, I think, has really allowed the guys to relax. And then, you know, on the field, they're really stressing fundamentals, just catching the ball, making the easy throws. Don't try to do too much. And I think they've responded to that as well. And, you know, he's got a good coaching staff. And we all know the great work Brent Strom did with Keuchel and McHugh this year. And you know, that continues. So he's been great. I think he's been the perfect man for the job at this point where they are. And you know, we really haven't seen A.J. Hinch with the Astros faced with any adversity yet. He would probably disagree with you that he faces adversity every day. But it'll be interesting to see what happens if they do have a 6-7-game losing streak or they slide in the second, third place, and just what kind of manager he is or how he's going to get these guys to respond.
Well, it has been really fun and entertaining to watch to this point. Just one of the great stories in Major League Baseball so far this season. But let's change the conversation just a little bit into the Franchise Four. And fans can go to Astros.com and jump on there and vote for their four. There are eight guys currently on the roster, on the ballot, if you will. You can write in a vote as well. But when you look at those eight guys, B-Tags, and I know where your preferences are based on your fandom as a kid growing up, but where do you come down on the Franchise Four on this list?
Well, I think the Astros, unlike a lot of others, I think it's pretty clear-cut. I mean, I think there's three guys on there that I think that have to be on there, and that's the Killer Bees, Bagwell, Biggio, and Lance Berkman. I mean, I think those are the top three offensive players in the history of the club, and they were there during some of the club's great years in 04 and 05, and in Biggio's case and Bagwell's case, even longer than that. So I think you start with those three, and those are pretty much shoo-ins. After that, you know, it gets a little interesting. I know Nolan Ryan has the fourth spot on the vote, and I think he would get my vote as well. He played 27 seasons now, but he played a third of those, nine of those in Houston, pretty much all of the 1980s in Houston. Threw a no-hitter here, was a ballpark attraction. I remember growing up, if Nolan Ryan or Mike Scott pitched, you know, you tried to go to the ballpark that day. If it was a Friday night, my dad was like, okay, Ryan's pitching, let's go. And you went to watch Nolan Ryan strike out 12 and probably lose 2-1, but hey, it was still you know he was going to pitch great. So I have Nolan in there. I know some guys want to make a case for Jose Cruz, and, you know, he played in an era where the home runs weren't leaving the ballpark. In fact, Jose Cruz led the Astros 1 year with 9 home runs. It was just the era he played in. It was the ballpark he played in. But certainly Cruz, one of the top 5 or 6 offensive players in Astros history. Jimmy Winn as well, big-time home run hitter from a little guy, but played in a big ballpark and might have hit 300-plus homers. But at the end of the day, I think Bagwell and Biggio have to be there. Berkman's got the numbers. And Nolan Ryan is Nolan Ryan. He's a Texas legend, played here a long time. And anytime Nolan Ryan's on a list, people are going to vote for him. And if you look, I think he's still in three of the teams he played for, the Angels, Franchise Four, and the Rangers as well. So a very popular guy outside of Texas.
I was going to say, he could easily, you know, be a Franchise Four for three franchises, which is the same reason why he could easily be left off all those teams.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure people would say, hey, you know, he's a Ranger as much as he was an Astro, you know, more or less, and you could argue his best years were with the Angels. I mean, those were some dominant seasons.
Yeah, he threw four no-hitters with the Angels, really established himself in the major leagues. And even after he left Houston, he took his career to another level, threw two more no-hitters and sort of became this mythical, I think that's where he really solidified himself as like a Texas legend. You know, he took Robin Ventura and beat him up on the mound. He's, you know, a 42-year-old guy beating up this, you know, athlete in the prime of his career. They put it on a poster and it's on everyone's bedroom, every boy's bedroom in Texas. So he really became just a Texas hero while he was with the Rangers. But so not surprised that he's on their Franchise Four as well. But certainly Astros fans, Nolan Ryan, I think, is going to always have a special place in their heart.
Yeah, no doubt. And, on Texas Hero yourself, Brian McTaggart. Always good to chat. Thanks for the insight this week. We'll talk to you again in about a week. And Alden, I mean, a lot of directions you can go right now with the Angels and their struggles, whether they be offensively or otherwise. Let's start, though, with one of, you know, the marquee names, Jared Weaver. It just has not worked out for him so far in this first month plus of the season. How's he handling it, and what are folks thinking right now?
Well, Dave, he's really, really frustrated, clearly, and you could see the frustration growing after each start. I really don't think it's even about the ERA, which is bad. It's over six through his first six starts. I think he's just not really giving his team a chance to win, and he takes so much pride in winning games and in being that top-of-the-rotation guy who the Angels could count on every 5 days. I mean, this is a guy who was tied for the American League lead with 18 wins just last year. But he's just not getting it done right now. He's getting hit hard, and it all comes back to the velocity. And I know this is it's exhausting how much we've talked about velocity with Jared Weaver. It's brought up with him all the time, but it's just unavoidable right now. Jared Weaver, the last 2 years, was averaging close to 87 miles an hour on his fastball. That's not a very high velocity, obviously, but that was good enough for him. It was good enough for at least his changeup to be deceptive and for hitters not to be sitting on a particular pitch all the time. This year, that velocity is 83, 84 miles an hour. And as crafty as Weaver is, as great as his changeup is, as deceptive as his delivery can be, it's just really hard to make a living when you're throwing the ball 83 to 84 miles an hour. We're seeing now that lefties are really starting to hit him very well, and it was no more clear of that than at the beginning of the game on Sunday when the first two batters hit bombs over the right field fence at AT&T Park, which is really hard to do. And then the third batter, Angel Pagan, hit a ball off the very top of the right field wall at AT&T Park. And I think the problem is, Dave, is that, you know, when your fastball is as slow as it's become, which is 83 to 84, now the differential between his fastball and his changeup is not very big. So guys are just sitting back and they're just hammering it. And, you know, for a while now we talked about with Weaver, because he doesn't have the explosive fastball that just gets by guys, his margin for error was really small because, you know, he had to be precise with his command, precise with his location if he's not blowing the ball past hitters. Now that's even greater. I'm not trying to say Weaver is done or that he's not going to be an effective pitcher for them. I think if anybody deserves the benefit of the doubt when the velocity is low, it's Weaver. He knows how to pitch. He's just a great pitcher. But once you start venturing into 83, 84, now it becomes really, really tough. Jared's going to have to try to figure something out. Mike Socha and Jared Weaver both say that he's not hurt. He feels fine. You know, this is just something that he has. This is what he has right now. So he's either going to have to try to reinvent himself a little bit, try to use a particular pitch more often, or he's going to have to try to figure out a way to regain a couple more ticks on his fastball so that he could be successful again. I think it's going to be really fascinating to watch to see what Weaver does the rest of the way. He's still only 32 years old, and we should give him the benefit of the doubt, but he's got to change something.
Yeah, that's just it, right? I mean, it's not like he's an old man. You would figure there'd still be some mileage left in that arm, and yet, as you point out, you know, the velocity has dropped. As we're discussing it, I just think of Jamie Moyer. I mean, there are any number of pitchers who have had to, as you say, reinvent themselves or tweak things. But, I mean, get on the phone, call Jamie Moyer, and talk about it. You know, figure out some things that other guys did, because you're right, 83, 84, that's almost impossible to get by with that in the big league.
Yeah, that's a good point you brought up with Jamie Moyer. I don't know if he ever had such a drastic velocity drop from year to year, because with Jared, it's been 36, so that's why it's kind of stunning. He doesn't really know what to do, because he wasn't 83 last year. He was 87, which is not high, but it was good enough. But you're right. I mean, guys have done it before. Jamie Moyer, I think, is a great example. The guy pitched until he was like 63 years old. But Weaver's going to have to figure something out.
Well, while he's working his way through that, you know, the Angels, it's amazing. I mean, he's second place in the division. And a division where really everybody is flawed right now. The A's are scuffling. Mariners are struggling. The Rangers are just beaten up again. with the exception of the Astros. And that's the one team that I think many from the outside believe could still be caught. So the Angels, not in a terrible spot, but offensively they need to figure something out. In particular, their catching position has been a disaster, and I see that Hank Conger's trade bait has matriculated now, right? Carlos Perez being called up?
Yeah, he was called up because the Angels were desperate for some offense behind the plate because, you know, their everyday guy, Chris Iannetta, who's a guy who's supposed to, who has historically always been able to get on base at a very high rate, he's batting below 100. And then his backup, Drew Butera, he's never been a good offensive player. Drew Butera's strength is his defense behind the plate. He's got a great arm. But the Angels can no longer sustain having zero offense from behind the plate. And they're not going to release Chris Iannetta. He's in the last season of a 3-year, $15 million contract. So something had to be done. Carlos Perez was really hitting very well in Salt Lake. And he's a very good defensive catcher. He was a very... This is a pretty sneaky under-the-radar signing for them because his defense has always been solid. And if he's going to be hitting that way, he needs to be up in the big leagues because they're not scoring runs. The problem with that move was, though, they designated Drew Butera for assignment, and I know they don't want to lose him. So they're going to cross their fingers that he could clear waivers. But this is a move done solely because they are not hitting right now. And, you know, and you're right, you touched on it early about how they're in pretty good position. They really are. I mean, coming off a 3-game sweep in San Francisco, they were one game off last year's pace. Last year, when they won a major league leading 98 games. And, you know, the Astros have a 7-game lead in the American League West. I don't know if there are too many, not to be overly cynical, but I don't know if there are too many people who think the Astros are going to win the division this year. They may be a year or two away from doing something like that. And I think if you could take one consolation from the Angels' early struggles offensively is that the guys who are not hitting are guys who historically hit. Albert Pujols' batting average is hovering below in the low 200s. You don't think that's going to last. Chris Iannetta has been one of the best on-base catchers in baseball for a while. He's batting below 100. Matt Joyce, who hit his first home run on Monday against Felix Hernandez, maybe that gets him going. Matt Joyce has always been a great on-base guy. He's not going to all of a sudden forget how to hit. You know, these are guys who have track records. So I don't think we ever expected the Angels' offense to be as dynamic as it was last year. Last year, their offense, they led the major leagues in runs, and that offense made up for a lot of deficiencies early on with the bullpen, late with some rotation struggles. I don't know if they have that this year, but I think that group is definitely better than what they've shown so far. And I think midseason, come June or July, like we talked about, they have extra money. I expect them to go get a bat. They'll probably get a left fielder so that they have a platoon at DH with Matt Joyce and CJ Crone, which was supposed to be the plan at the start of the year before all this whole Josh Hamilton fiasco went on.
Yeah, to your point, there's no way this offense is as bad as it has performed so far this year. Alden, real quick, as we kind of wrap things up, the Franchise 4 is winding down, and folks can still go to angels.com to cast their vote. Do you have a clear favorite 4 among the group?
You know, I've been thinking about this. I think there's a pretty clear consensus here with the Angels because it kind of touches on every aspect of the franchise. I think you got to put Mike Trout in there. He may go down as one of the greatest players ever. He's one of the most, he's probably the most exciting player the Angels have ever had. You got to put Mike Trout in there. You got to put Vladimir Guerrero in there. He won an MVP award with the Angels, and his numbers with them were just off the charts. So that's two right there. I think you got to put Nolan Ryan in there as well. Nolan Ryan was, although he pitched longer in Texas, Houston with the Astros and with the Rangers, he just accomplished so much while he was here. He was here for a very long time. He's the best pitcher they've ever had. You got to throw Nolan Ryan in there. And I think, you know, the last one was a little tough. I think those three are locks. The last one was a little tough. I think I would go ultimately, after changing my mind, I'd go with Tim Salmon, franchise leader in home runs. And I think you got to get someone in there who's a representative of that 2002 championship team. But while including those guys, you know, you're also leaving some guys out. You're leaving out Jim Fregosi, who was one of the best shortstops in baseball during his time with the Angels. You're leaving out Bobby Grich, a guy who maybe a guy a lot of people feel is probably the biggest Hall of Fame snub ever. Somebody who brought great defense and great offense to second base. You're leaving out Don Baylor, current hitting coach, who was the first MVP in franchise history. You know, you're leaving out a lot of great guys. Chuck Finley, one of the most accomplished starting pitchers in Angels history. Jared Weaver, who we just talked about, who's going to go down as one of the best pitchers. There's a lot of guys in there. I think at the end of the day, I'd settle on those four: Stammen, Guerrero, Trout, Nolan Ryan.
Yeah, interesting. I thought Garrett Anderson might sneak in there on your ballot, but
Garrett Anderson
that's
as
the
well.
Challenge.
You're right.
Yeah. Well, listen, great stuff as always, Alden, and we'll see. Maybe that Angels offense finds its stroke this week, and we can break it down next week. Jane, the A's, what, 500, and it's really been a matter, it seems to me anyway, of close games, bullpen work. And I know that's oversimplifying things a little bit, but certainly you could draw a straight line to at least five losses that have gone down in a negative way because of that, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is a team that's already 0-7 in one-run games, and you know, it's really surprising just because, you know, this is a team that in recent years we saw them winning these close games. You know, we saw a lot of walk-off wins and a lot of these one-run wins. And, you know, you're looking at it, and it comes down to the bullpen. I mean, the bullpen's just been awful. There's really no other way to put it. Just really disappointing for this team. You know, they're responsible for eight of the club's losses. And we saw it again last night. Now, Jesse Hahn didn't have the best night, but, you know, the A's are still, you know, giving the bullpen leads, and not just, you know, 1-2-run leads, large leads, and they're giving them away. And there just seems to be no right recipe right now with the bullpen, no matter what Bob Melvin does. I mean, there's only so much he can do. You know, I know that a bad bullpen, there's nothing that makes the manager look worse, but I mean, really, he's tried everything, and, you know, he's having trouble getting to his late-inning guys, Evan Scribner, Tyler Clippard. I mean, we really haven't seen much of Tyler Clippard this year, you know, because there's been so few save opportunities because these games have already been blown before, you know, the time when he would normally come in. And I think we're seeing, you know, the effects of not having a Sean Doolittle there, where, you know, you have Clippard and Scribner available earlier in the game, but you're having to wait to use those guys. So I really wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing them earlier in games, just because, you know, if they can't get to the ninth inning with those guys, and, you know, maybe try putting them in earlier and then see who's left for the ninth inning. But it's just become real disappointing, real frustrating. I mean, there was such a strong sense of frustration in the clubhouse last night because, you know, just when you think they're starting to gain some momentum, you know, another bullpen meltdown happens, and they've only won back-to-back games on one occasion this year, which is pretty remarkable. Because it's, you know, they're scoring runs, they're getting mostly good starting pitching, and just can't get it done in the later innings.
Yeah, it is, and there's no more, I guess, demoralizing way to lose a game than the way they're losing games. You know, sometimes when you see a bullpen struggle, you know, it can be a function of, well, in this case, I think of O'Flaherty, Eric O'Flaherty, whose shoulder has been a problem. And so I think we can now say, okay, his ineffectiveness was largely due to, you know, maybe a lack of help. And then when you're working around guys like that, you know, and you've got to figure, you know, Bob Melvin knows the limitations, at least some of them, with some of these guys, that you start putting guys in positions where they're maybe not best suited. And, you know, it's a situation like O'Flaherty can really have far-reaching effects. But what are they thinking right now with Eric? And, you know, I guess short and long-term, what's his status?
He's going to be shut down for a while. You know, luckily there's no structural damage in his shoulder, but they did find, you know, a good amount of inflammation and irritation in the joint. So they're going to shut him down. He won't even, you know, pick up a ball and start throwing again until his range of motion is back to where he's not having any pain anymore, and it's stronger. So you have to think, you know, at least a few weeks, unless, you know, he has a sudden turnaround. But without him, I mean, it's a big loss, because even though he wasn't throwing well, I mean, that really handicaps Bob Melvin in the bullpen with just one left-hander, with Fernando Abad, and even Abad's been one of the ones that's really struggling. And so, like last night, you're seeing a rookie, like R.J. Alvarez, come into a game pressure situation, and I don't know that, you know, he's, you know, really best suited for those type of situations just yet, but there's just no other options. I mean, Melvin had no other choice. You know, Dan Otero had pitched in 5 straight games, and granted, I think he only needed about 29 pitches in those 5 games, but still, 5 straight days for a reliever is a bit much. So he was not available, you know, leaving one fewer option yet again. And I think you're seeing a lot of these young guys like Alvarez and Chris Bassett, where they're almost kind of scared a little bit. And I think part of it is just knowing the way things have gone for the bullpen and maybe trying to do too much to right it. And, you know, you're seeing walks, you're seeing pitches thrown to the backstop, and just kind of uncharacteristic things from, you know, these type of pitchers. But I think the pressure is really high for them to get the job done, because it hasn't been done. And they're guys that, you know, aren't used to these roles. But, you know, they're really, you look at the bullpen, and there's just so many few ways to use these guys. And, you know, then you look down and, you know, people are, of course, asking, well, you know, bring up this guy, bring up that guy. Well, a lot of these guys down in AAA aren't on the 40-man roster, and it's a bit more complicated than a lot of fans, you know, think. You know, adding a guy to a 40-man, having to get rid of, you know, another player in doing so. So, you know, guys like Pat Vendetti, Fernando Rodriguez, who are throwing well in AAA, they're not on the 40-man roster, so it's not a quick fix. And you know, the A's want to show confidence in the guys they do have here. They've already kind of mixed things up, and, you know, they want to keep throwing them out there to show them, you know, hey, this is your job. You know, you got to get it done. We have confidence in you to get it done. And I think showing that trust goes a long way. Right now, they're just not getting the job done. So I think we might see some roles shift in the bullpen. But as far as the personnel goes, you know, they really can only do so much at this point.
Maybe lucky right now that 3 of the other teams in the division are also going through similar struggles. The Angels, Mariners, and Rangers all have problems of their own. But, you know, so here we talk pitching for these first 7 minutes, and I look at your franchise 4, right, this online contest right now. Fans can get involved at athletics.com and vote for their franchise 4. And the A's franchise is beautiful. I love looking at the ballot, because it's one of the only ones with 4 pitchers on the ballot, with Eckersley, Raleigh, Fingers, Lefty Grove, Catfish Hunter. So many are just hitters. But it's always been one of the real strengths of this franchise's history. When you look at this franchise 4, this ballot of 8 individuals up there, is it an easy choice for you, or where do you struggle?
I think it probably is. I mean, I think you see right now the guy in the number 1 spot, Ricky Henderson, is probably there for a reason. I mean, you look at what he did. I mean, not just for the A's, but just in you know, a wider perspective, looking at you know, the history of baseball. I mean, there's so few guys that have impacted both sides of the ball in the way, you know, Ricky did. I mean, what he did defensively, offensively, you know, on the bases, it was really remarkable. And I think, you know, a lot of his personality goes into his legacy as well. So I'm really not surprised to see him in the number 1 spot. And, you know, him also still being around the team, you know, he helps out down in the minors. He'll come up, you know, spend a lot of time in Oakland throughout the season and during spring training, helping guys, you know, on the bases and with hitting. So I think his presence is still, you know, very large. And I mean, you know, like I said, just not what he did for the franchise, but baseball overall, it's hard to argue with him being there. But, I mean, it's very impressive, like you said, looking at the number of guys that are representing the A's and, you know, the names there. I mean, the pitching really is, you know, what's kind of driven this franchise.
You like Dennis Eckersley, Raleigh Fingers on this list, or do you have to go with some of the, you know, you talk about counting stats for guys like Jimmy Fox, you know, 534 homers, nearly 2,000 RBIs, you know, Al Simmons. I mean, there's some, they're old school guys, but man, they put up some big numbers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, and the old school guys, they, you know, they're on there deservingly so, but I mean, you look at, you know, Eckersley's place in A's history, Raleigh Fingers, and, you know, just guys that, you know, really were kind of the face of the team at the time. And, you know, so when you think about faces of the franchise, you know, of course they're going to be in there. You know, still guys that, you know, you go to the Coliseum and you look around, and I think the A's do a really good job, you know, one of the best at recognizing, you know, their past and really magnifying, you know, what these guys did for the franchise. And even Bob Melvin's really good at, you know, reminding his teams during spring training of the franchise's history and their success and bringing, you know, to mind players like these guys. So, you know, you look around the Coliseum and you see a lot of that. So it's pretty cool. And, you know, this little franchise four thing is kind of a neat way to remind fans of that.
Yeah, we'll see how it ends up. Voting coming to a close here pretty soon, but so much great history in this athletics organization, even if the current situation is a little choppy. All right, Jane Lee, I'll let you get back after it. Thanks so much for the time.
All right, no problem. Thank you.
Greg, yeah, I guess I should just ask, have you gotten a boomstick yet from Nelson Cruz?
I would love to have one because it seems like anybody who gets a boomstick hits home runs and does well. So, pretty fun story. Nelson Cruz is on fire. I mean, the guy is one of the better streaks in baseball history and certainly in Mariners history with 14 homers in his first 26 games and along with that hitting .340 and his slugging percentage up near .800. And this guy's off the charts. Just really, really doing everything he can with this team. And the fun story that I think you're referring to, he's loaned one of his bats, one of his boomsticks to Logan Morrison, who 6 days ago was hitting .149 and then just scuffling. And borrows a bat from Nelly and goes 4-for-4 that day in Texas and says, boy, maybe I better keep using this thing. And since then, he's on a six-game hitting streak, 10-for-23, three homers, really, really looking like Boomstick Jr. there, and a nice little combo there. They've hit a couple home runs in the same inning the last couple games, and really starting to pick up some offense there for Logan. So kind of nice to see, and yeah, I think everybody needs a boomstick.
Well, the only problem with that story is that I guess it comes to light that Nelson Cruz, you know, he may just be an average player. He just has a really good bat. I mean, it's all about the boomstick. But I, you know, you pointed out in a recent piece what he's done in these first 26 games. Greg, we talked about this 2 weeks ago. That, it, you know, had you ever seen anything like it in with the Mariners or otherwise? And we were hard pressed to come up with a run like he had been on. That was 2 weeks ago. It's only gotten better. And he, what he has done in these 26 games is only matched by a handful of guys.
Yeah, there's only been four other players in the history of baseball with 14 homers in the first 26 games. So it is, you know, it's something you just don't see. I mean, to keep that kind of pace obviously is impossible over the course of a season. But I think the most interesting thing to me is it's a pace on a new team and a new situation. You see so many guys, they sign the big contract, they come out and they press. I mean, we've seen it over and over in baseball. We've seen it in Seattle. There's this pressure to keep that up. You know, he hits 40 bombs for the Orioles last year. Comes and signs with Seattle. Can he do it again? And he's just come out of the gates looking relaxed, looking like this is what he does, you know. And there's just no sign of let up with him. And, you know, that's impressive for a guy to handle things, you know, a new team, new situation, new environment, and just to keep on that tear. So, yeah, it's been fun to watch. And I guess we'll all just wait and see how long he can keep it rolling.
Yeah, just sit back and enjoy it. He's he's in unprecedented territory. So is King Felix, I guess, 5-0 to start the season. He's not done that before. But that doesn't mean that everything has gone perfectly for the Mariners at this early part of the season. And I see they're addressing some deficiencies at shortstop now.
They did. They brought up Chris Taylor, and he's going to be playing a lot of shortstop. Brad Miller's still on the team, so it'll be interesting to see how they work that. Taylor, I think, is going to get the majority of the playing time, and we'll see what they do with Brad. Brad, interestingly, before the game on Monday, was out working in the outfield with outfield coach Andy Van Slyke in center field, taking balls off the bat, working on his throws in, doing some stuff, tracking some balls. And he's a guy who hasn't played the outfield since he was in high school, played even then he was a shortstop, but he was on a traveling team with some big-time studs in Florida, and he played a little bit in the outfield then. That's literally his outfield experience. But he's a good athlete who runs well, and there's been kind of a thought behind the scenes for a year now that this kid might be a pretty good outfielder if they ever need him out there. If Taylor can be the shortstop and they need to find a place for Brad Miller, I think we might see him probably go down the minors, work on some things. I don't think they're going to just throw him in there at the big league level and learn on the fly like that. But that might be the future. We'll see how that rolls. Chris Taylor's certainly an excellent defensive player, and they want to shore things up there. The tough thing is Brad was hitting pretty well, so it's not an easy move. They haven't had a lot of guys supplementing Nelson Cruz with the bat, so they need to be careful there. And Miller was a guy with some pop and hitting fairly well in the early going. So interesting to see how that goes. Taylor doesn't have quite the same pop as Miller. Was hitting .313 down in Tacoma and capable hitter and certainly a good glove there at shortstop. So that's where they're heading. They got out of the box a little slow. They felt like they needed to shake things up a little, and that's one of the moves they made.
Yeah. Well, you're right. Not a whole lot of offense outside of Cruz either, and so it does kind of. It's an interesting play. A team coming home after this long road trip. They've got a couple games left in Anaheim. So far, they have weathered it pretty well. They've overall got to be happy, right, with the record on this road trip.
Well, I think the overall record sounds good. 4-4 at this point, going into Tuesday's game. In Anaheim here, that it's kind of a tough way to live it, though. They swept Texas, and everything was looking good, and then they got swept in Houston, and that was a tough one to swallow. 4 straight to an Astros team that's just on fire, and they came out of there limping a little bit. There's no doubt about it. Houston putting some pretty good distance between themselves and the rest of the AL West, and that was a tough series to get swept in. So. Licking their wounds a little bit out of that. They certainly, the overall 4-4 record, and see where they go from here in Anaheim and heading home. So they can recover. There's no doubt. Plenty of time left. But certainly you don't want to keep looking at Houston putting distance between them and the field. So it's an interesting division to see how things roll out here.
It really is, because everybody else is bunched in the same spot, scuffling and trying to figure it out. But Let's take a moment and look at this contest online, the Franchise 4, and folks can go to Mariners.com and vote for their 4. I looked at this list, and to me there are some no-doubters, but I don't know that my 4 is necessarily as clear-cut as it could be. Are you locked in on 4, guys?
I think it's a pretty fascinating Franchise 4 debate for the Mariners. I think it's a pretty good baseball debate to me, because to me there's 5 guys really that any of those 5, there's a couple that you mentioned we can talk about it. I think Ken Griffey Jr. and Edgar Martinez are going to be in pretty much anybody's list when you're talking about the 4 most impactful players in franchise history. I don't think anybody's going to argue with Griffey and Edgar. And then to me there's Randy Johnson, Felix Hernandez, and Ichiro Suzuki are 3 for the last 2 spots. It's pretty interesting how you look at those guys and debate it. And then the other guys in the ballot, certainly good names. Jay Buhner, certainly a fan favorite. Alvin Davis is Mr. Mariner in Seattle, and Jamie Moyer, the all-time franchise winner and as a pitcher. So some good names on that ballot. But to me, that last 2 spots, you really have fun, and it is fun, trying to figure out. It's pretty interesting. Mariners team never been to the World Series, but when you look at big-time stars, they've had their share. And
oh my goodness.
You try to decide, pick 2, Randy Johnson, Felix Hernandez, Ichiro Suzuki, who who out of that three is the most impactful players. I think it's a pretty fun debate.
Yeah, I guess. Well, and part of the issue, of course, Felix still, you know, in the heart of his career. I mean, we don't know what he's going to ultimately accomplish. Randy Johnson spent so much time with so many different teams. It's sort of, you know, I guess colors his career. It could be confusing for folks. And then Ichiro, to me, I don't know. There's something about Ichiro that just says he has to be on the list.
I could debate you because I can go Felix to me. He's been there 11 years. He's won the Cy Young, perfect game. He's had some. We're talking. I think the definition of impact is what they're asking impact players. Felix is an impact, and to me, still rolling. Interestingly, the same number of wins currently as a Mariner as Randy Johnson, 130 wins for both of them. Take what you want. 5 All-Star games for both of them. Both won a Cy Young. Randy had the no-hitter in Seattle. Felix, a perfect game. Pretty interesting comparison there. Pretty comparable at this point in their careers. And obviously, Felix still rolling. So I'm going to vote for Felix. And then it comes down to me, Randy versus Ichiro. And I guess this is where I come. Ichiro, it's tough, as you mentioned, I think, to overlook a guy, 10 All-Star games, 10 gold gloves, won an MVP, 2,500 hits. I mean, he was an icon here. But I will make a pretty good debate for Randy if you want to hear me out. Because again, when you talk about impact, and I'm here to watch all those guys, and Randy's going into the Hall of Fame as a Diamondback. But in Seattle, you know, when I think of impact moments, he pops up in a lot of them. You know, the beating the Angels in the 95 playoff game and hoisting Dan Wilson up, that was a monumental moment in the Mariners' history. Coming out of the bullpen, Game 5 of the division series that year to beat the Yankees, that sends chills most Mariner fans just thinking about Randy striding in out of the bullpen. You know, the All-Star game, you know, with the Randy Kruk incident is just kind of a classic moment. His no-hitter, and just the games. And he struck out 19 guys twice in a game. There was a game, I remember he struck out 18, and he threw 160 pitches against the Rangers. I mean, this guy was a horse. And this was all in the Mariners uniform. And yeah, he went on to other things and obviously one of the greatest players in the history of baseball as a lefty. A lot of that early stuff came for the Mariners. It was important stuff. It was a time that really saved this franchise and a lot of reason that Safeco Field, you know, he and Griffey and Edgar and those guys. So to me, those are pretty impactful moments. And I'm not going to argue with anybody that picks Ichiro because this is a, like I said, it's an interesting debate. And he had his certainly an icon here. I just don't know that his stuff was quite as impactful. He was here for a long time, did great things, and obviously a great player. But to me, you put that gun to your head, and you got to pick. That's why I think it's a fun debate. I think it's fun for fans, and it's an interesting little thing. So that's kind of where I stand on it. I don't think anybody's wrong. I don't think, you know, you can be wrong. I think it's pretty good stuff, and certainly fun to talk about.
Yeah, well, Randy's on my list, too, and if for no other reason than that Game 5 in 95. That was one of those really, really great baseball moments. Well, look, the fans will sort it out here in the next coming days. Greg, great stuff as always, man. Enjoy your week.
You bet, Dave. Good talking to you. And, yeah, go online and vote for the Franchise Four and have other people pick it because you and I can talk about it, but really the fans are the ones who decide this thing. And pretty fun thing. They're going to roll them out at the All-Star game and say who the four were. So that'll be a fun thing.
You know, secret, yard. It's been a brutal start for the Texas Rangers, but Monday night they put an end to that incredible winning streak of the Houston Astros, and you know the Astros see it from their side. The Rangers perhaps see it as just another win, but man, I don't know if there's such a thing as just another win right now for the Rangers. They're all so important.
Now, the big thing about Monday night's game was Ross Detweiler pitched great. 7 innings, 4 hits, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts. This guy has been struggling. This is the first time in 5 starts that the Rangers won a game with him on the mound. So, you know, like you said, every win is big for the Rangers, but they really need Ross Detweiler to really come around as a pitcher and really throw the ball well like he did last night.
Yeah, Leonis Martin nursing a bit of a sore wrist. Looks like he could be out for a little while, and maybe – can you make an argument that, you know, maybe it's a good thing for him and maybe he just needs some time away or something because it has been a struggle for him?
No, he needs to play. This guy has got a chance to be a good leadoff hitter. He needs to be out there every day. He's a good defensive outfielder. He needs to play. He needs to learn. If the Rangers' offense is going to go, he's got to be a key part of it. They need him out there.
Do you think he's the best solution at leadoff for them, or would you lean to giving Shin-Soo Choo some opportunity there?
If it was me, I'd put Leonis Martin out there and see what they can do. I mean, you know, I don't know if he can do it or not, but that's their best lineup if he can. If Shin-Soo Choo has a bad leadoff, then Martinez is in a spot where he's not as productive. I think you got to give him an extended run at leadoff.
Yeah, I guess one of those things too, right? Just find out. I mean, let's quit beating around the bush. Let's find out, see what we have, and move on. You now have the dubious honor of being the Josh Hamilton guy. You're going to get the questions all the time, no doubt. But what is the news? What's the update? How much longer till perhaps Rangers fans are seeing Hamilton back?
2 weeks is a good guess, Dave. He played in a game yesterday, an extended spring game. I heard that his timing is off, but otherwise he looks good, running well, swinging the bat well. You know, he needs time in, and that's going to take a couple of weeks, whether it's extended spring training or AAA, Round Rock, or somewhere. I don't think it will be more than 2 weeks. It could be less. He just needs to get his timing down. From everything I've heard, he looks in great shape.
Okay, well, that'd be a huge lift for this team. John Daniels was taking some questions from the media the other day and addressing the bullpen issues. You got 8 players hitting under 200. There's a lot on the plate right now for the Rangers general manager. At what point do they concede that, you know, this is a year where they might have to start looking forward to future years?
A month. I'd say June 1st. Once it gets to June 1st and there's still, you know, 7, 9, 10 games under 500, I think it's just not realistic to think that they're going to climb back into contention. I think you start looking at, you know, some guys that you might want to move. I don't know if Gallardo would be one of them. Colby Lewis, certainly Adrian Beltre, there'd be some interest in him. I mean, there's not a whole lot of players on this team that would be to get a big return. Everybody remembers the Mark Teixeira trade in 2007, Dave. But I don't think they can get that kind of return. But I think come June 1st, I think you got to at least look and see what's out there and what you might be able to get back.
Is he tipping his hands at all, John Daniels, that maybe he'll be looking that direction? Or is he still, you know, towing the company line that they're gonna compete?
Yesterday he said that they're not looking at that right now. They don't want to get into that situation. They want to play better. I think right now they're hoping this team will play better. You know, and you got to see what happens when Hamilton comes back and see what kind of lift he gives them. I think you at least got to give it a couple of weeks with Josh Hamilton in the lineup and see what kind of impact that has on the team before you make a drastic move.
Not to be a big cynic, but TR, don't you think when you look at this division, A's are 5 games under, Mariners are struggling, the Angels have major issues, so the Astros have run away early on, but the cynic in me says, they're not ready to win a division. So even though the Rangers are in the hole that they're in, I mean, do they maybe feel like in some way that would buy them more time? Or do you feel that way, that maybe this division really still is up for grabs?
Well, I agree 100%. I don't want to downplay what the Astros have done, because they've got some good young pitching with Keuchel and McHugh. I mean, you really have to like those two young pitchers. And, you know, they got Scott Feldman, who's a savvy veteran. I mean, they got some guys that can throw the ball. And, you know, they got some guys in the lineup that they're playing well. I'll tell you, this Springer kid is awesome. I'm really starting to really figure out why people love him so much. Every time I see, he's made like 2 or 3 incredible plays defensively against the Rangers. You know, you got to love Altuve. And some of these other kids are really coming around. But I think you're right. I mean, this division is far from over, even though the Astros have played extremely well. You know, the Mariners have struggled more than people thought. I think if anybody would have guessed who would have jumped out to a big lead, it would have been the Mariners. I don't think Rangers can wait around too long. I don't think it's going to stay like this. But, yeah, you're right. Right now they've bought themselves a little bit of time because, you know, 3 out of the other 5 teams have struggled as well.
Yeah. Well, turn our attention maybe for a moment here to the Franchise 4 contest going on right now at Rangers.com, where fans can – jump on and pick from the eight guys right now on the ballot, there is a write-in spot as well, I guess, but eight guys on the ballot, pick four for the franchise four. I don't know how much time you've spent debating this or poring over this ballot, but what do you think, TR? Do you have four clear-cut guys?
Juan Gonzalez is definitely the most significant player in Rangers history in my mind. Two-time MVP. I'd put him number one. I'd definitely put Pudge Rodriguez right up there, too. I mean, you know, this is a guy that's going to the Hall of Fame here in a couple of years. You know, then you look at – you got a team to go to two World Series, and we don't have a guy on there from that club. So, you know, I put Michael Young on there. You know, just not only was he a significant part of the two World Series teams, but you know, his longevity and all the club records. But, you know, Nolan Ryan I would be the fourth. He wasn't here very long, but he had such an impact, and I think really his presence in Texas led to the ballpark in Arlington, which is obviously the most huge, significant event. So I would go Juan Gonzalez, Yvonne Rodriguez, Michael Young, and Nolan Ryan. So that leaves off, who am I leaving off? Rafael Palmeiro. He'd be set, but I'd put him behind those four. And I think Charlie Huff and Buddy Bella on there as well. Jim Sundberg, all great players, all had significant roles in this franchise's history. But when you talk about the guys who put him in the playoffs, put him in the World Series, got the ballpark built, you'd have to deal with Juan Gonzalez, Yvonne Rodriguez, Michael Young, Nolan Ryan.
Yeah, pretty solid arguments right there. And, you know, I don't know where you come down on guys who spent part of their careers with other teams. I mean, you mentioned Ryan, and he wasn't exactly a full-time Ranger in his career. But, I mean, you know, Juan Gon and Pudge, those two are absolute lead pipe locks. Well, listen, TR, great stuff this week. I appreciate it. And we'll see. We'll see. Maybe the Rangers can still find a little spark in this offense before it gets too late. We'll talk about it again next week.
All right, Dave. Thank you very much.
And thanks so much for listening to this week's edition, MLB.com Extras, the American League West.